Good afternoon, everybody. This is the Reverend Blake Ruby in San Antonio. Welcome to my show, The Church of the Soul's Evolution. Today, I woke up and went to exercise, and then we went to a party, a Toastmasters party. And the club's name is Cheers. And I was talking with this man about my show. And for those of you that didn't tune in to any of my previous shows or haven't listened to my shows in the past, I talk about spirituality, not religion so much, mainly spirituality. Good subjects like near-death experiences, angelic encounters, extraterrestrial phenomena. Are we alone in the universe? Who God is? There's so much to talk about, and my time seems to fly. It really does. And it has been since the 12th of April, since I had my last show, almost a month. Today is the 10th of May, because my wife and I took a two-week cruise from L.A. to the Mexican Riviera, Puerto Vallarta, Mazatlan, and Cabo San Lucas. 7 days, and then we came back, and there's something which is known as back-to-back cruises. And when we got back after 1 week, we didn't even have to get off the boat. We waited around, and then customs came on board. All together took about an hour, and then we did it again, another week. 2 weeks, back-to-back cruises on the Carnival Panorama out of L.A. A very nice boat, relatively new. And it was a relaxing time. It's always relaxing for me and my wife, because we just have plenty of time to sit around and do nothing. We lie in bed, we watch TV, we get up, we exercise, we go to dinner at night, and then we catch the entertainment, which is always enjoyable. Even though we've seen the shows over and over again, the singers and dancers are so outstanding. And I recommend a cruise for anyone that's never taken one before. They're really enjoyable as long as you know the do's and don'ts of cruising. We are veteran cruisers, and myself, I've taken over 40 cruises, 46 I think is a number. My wife, she's around 30, close to 30. We're diamond guests, which means we have over 200 days cruising altogether. I mean, each of us, over 200 days of cruising altogether. And one of the best things I think about cruising is meeting the people on board. On this last cruise, each one actually had over 4,000 passengers. They are usually selling out nowadays. There's a lot of interest in cruising. Why? Because it's such a good vacation value. We get free cruises because we spend money in the casino, and then the casino kind of reimburses us in a way where we get these week cruises with a balcony room and free drinks on board, maybe about between $1,600 and $2,000 value. But we only paid like $500 for the port fees and taxes and the insurance. So it's a good deal overall, you know, based on the money we spend in the casino. We're making out a little bit ahead, but then we also spend money on other things on the cruise, like things from the gift shop or room service, or maybe a shore excursion, transportation to and from the airport. We've done it so long, dare I say that I'm getting a little bit bored? No, I can't say that, because there's always lots to do on board. But we just do our own thing, you know. We didn't get off the boat. I got off in Puerto Vallarta, the first stop, and I went to a pharmacy and I bought some antibiotics. And that's one cool thing about Mexico and other countries that I've known around the world, where you can buy antibiotics without a prescription. And that's a good thing, so that if you get sick, you don't have to wait a couple of days to go see a doctor. You can get some of that hardcore antibiotics. For me, usually I feel a cold or a virus coming on, and I know when I'm beyond the point of no return, so to speak, you know, when I do need that heavy artillery medication. And that's when I go to the doctor and I get antibiotics. It always clears it up. Nowadays, they're prescribing steroids. But for me, antibiotics have always worked, clearing up any kind of cold that I've gotten. You know, I always start feeling a sore throat and then a lot of nasal congestion and runny nose. I start taking antibiotics and it clears it up usually within a week. Otherwise, we didn't get off the boat at all, and that's okay because we're veteran cruisers. We've been off most of these ports of calls before, and we know what to expect. Sometimes we'll get off. We'll take a tour to a beach with lunch included, and that's always really nice. And the entertainment, again, I can't say just how wonderful the singers and dancers are. They give it 100% effort. They put their hearts and souls into all their performances. They do so well. It's really incredible. What else? Of course, we eat dinner every night. Usually I would go work out in the morning, hit the track, because I like doing my walking and running. That's what I do for exercise. And then I would go and get some breakfast. And being a vegan is always challenging, but surprisingly, ironically, on a cruise ship, there are plenty of options for me to eat. And with breakfast, I usually get potatoes, like hash browns or home fries, homemade fries. And they have baked beans, and I put the baked beans on top of the potatoes, and then I'll get some fruit, maybe some grapefruit slices or cantaloupe or what's that green melon they call, honeydew melon, and maybe a bowl of grits or a bowl of oatmeal and some water to drink, and I'll eat my breakfast, and then I'll bring my wife some breakfast back. Could you turn the TV off, please, hon? My wife's leaving. She's going to a restaurant that they usually go to when I have my radio show. It's a Vietnamese Thai restaurant. And they eat their usual food, and then she brings me back some tofu and vegetables. So I'll bring her back. Lately, she's been kind of on a bye, hon. See ya. May God keep you safe. On a kind of a diet. She's lost a lot of weight. When she turned 70, almost 2 years ago, she was on a keto diet. She lost over 100 pounds, and she was only eating meat and vegetables. Well, she's lost a lot of weight recently. She's looking very, very nice, very slim and trim. Because once she actually quit that diet after that, because she wanted to be nice for her 70th birthday, and she was on a cruise for the birthday, and she wore a sasha around her chest and a crown on her head saying, it's my 70th birthday. She got a lot of people stopping her and talking and offering her happy birthdays and so on. But shortly thereafter, when we got back, she quit the diet, and then she gained some pounds, and now she's got them back off again. But for breakfast on the cruise, this recent cruise, she was having a couple of hard-boiled eggs and some fruit and a couple of cinnamon pastries. And then for lunch, we would sometimes get room service, or I would go to the burger place, the deli actually, and get a veggie burger and maybe bring her some. I don't think I brought her anything back, but usually she had room service for lunch more than anything else, since you get a ham and cheese sandwich or a tuna fish salad sandwich and maybe some coleslaw or potato salad. And then we would always make our reservation for dinner, and every night they have a different menu, and it's always interesting what they have. And I would have a couple of options available for appetizers. I'm not a hardcore vegan. In other words, I'll eat a little dairy or eggs, you know. So I'm about 99% vegan, I would say. Maybe 99.5% vegan, and have been since 1999. And I'm going to tell you something that is just my opinion, and take it or leave it, believe it or not. I don't want to offend you. I know that you have free will, and I'm not here to judge you. I don't want to judge anyone. But I've noticed for myself that my spiritual development has improved over the years. Being a vegan, I don't have to deal with a lot of, especially red meat, you know, when I gave that up. Digestive issues, your digestion slows down. If you do a little research, if you're interested, when you eat red meat, the body kind of slows down, the vibration level slows down. So being a vegan has given me that opportunity to think more about spiritual development than what I'm eating or what I have been eating and the digestive issues that I'm going through, including constipation. I rarely get constipated being a vegan, which is a blessing because I used to a lot. I used to eat 2 steaks a week. You know, I could talk about anything on my radio show. You know, I love you. Don't take anything too seriously. Plus, there may be some of you out there who are vegans and can relate to what I'm saying. You keep on doing what you're doing. If it works for you, then that's fine. I'm just talking about my life, you know, everything that's going on with me. And also, we've got a cruise coming up in September out of San Francisco. We left out of San Francisco last September to Hawaii. It was a 15-day cruise. Very interesting. The Pacific Ocean was kind of rough on the way out of San Francisco for the first 4 days. You're going to take a drink? And surprisingly, whether it's the Pacific Ocean or the Caribbean Sea or the Gulf of Mexico, it all looks the same to me. And especially, I noticed recently on the way down to Puerto Vallarta and to Mazatlan and Cabasalucas, it all looks the same. Whether it's an ocean or a gulf or a sea, water color changes sometimes to a bluish, very beautiful blue, or back to a greenish, brownish, or even gunmetal gray color, you know, on cloudy days. But it is the best ocean view in the world. Take it from me. And I don't want to tell you what to do, but if you're looking for a good vacation value, even for those people that have to pay for their cruises, Carnival Cruise Lines is the best as far as price is concerned. And you can book a cruise like a year in advance or more even, and not have to pay it off right away. Just pay a deposit like $100 a person. And then pay it off, you know, every few months. I still owe on the one for October $1,020. So I've got until the 8th of July to pay that off. And other good things about cruises are there's always activities on board. Trivia and bingo. I've got something called Deal or No Deal. And then there's dancing. They had a rock band. Every cruise ship has a rock band. So my wife and I, we like dancing, and we were doing a lot of dancing to the rock band. And it's amazing, really. I don't want to say anything unkind about people, but it takes a lot to prompt people to get up and dance. And my wife and I were used to it. We did a lot of dancing. And I can understand, you know, you got to kind of break the ice. And we've seen it so many times before, we start dancing, and then other people join in. And there was a little girl that was running around and running back and forth, and it's very interesting. And there's karaoke. Now, me, I'm a karaoke king. I say that humbly because I always participate in karaoke. I have before. On the 46 cruises I've taken in the past, I usually always am there for the karaoke sessions, with an exception or two. But recently, I've noticed that there is a lot of interest now in karaoke. And to get your song put in, now they've got a system where you scan a code, and it takes you to like a database, and you choose your song, you put your name in there. And by the time I put my song in, I was like number 15. There were 14 people in front of me, and I had to wait like an hour sing my song. And I don't need to do that, really. I mean, I sang Frank Sinatra's My Way. And now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain. And I sang it without looking at the monitor, too, looking around at the people, because I know it like the back of my hand. I've memorized it. And I only had one little small hiccup for some reason. Well, I was kind of fighting off a cold. That's another thing, too, that I've had a problem with in the past. Recent cruises, I've gotten either sick before the cruise or during the cruise. Because you have to understand also, and I want to be honest with you, that some people do get sick on cruises because of the so many people and also the bacteria. The ventilation system might not be perfect. This was a relatively new boat, but we usually sleep at nighttime with the cabin door, the balcony door open to get fresh air in. But I noticed that I was doing a lot of coughing when the door was closed. So take that into consideration. But I think that would be applicable. You'd find that in any place you go to, any resort, say on a beach, you know, like a Sandals. But after a couple of days, and I got those antibiotics, and that cleared it up. And I was doing some things, I won't go into the details, but I found that my exercise routine or my singing routine, if I do things in a certain way, it makes me more susceptible to getting sick. And I'm 70 years old also. Plus, I've got one kidney, so that's another reason I became vegan, you know, because I was 44 years old when I became a vegan, and it was 4 years after the transplant, after doing research and experimenting with certain foods, I came to the conclusion, I'm going to take a drink. That eating foods that were easier to digest and had more fiber was better for my kidney. Because the kidneys filter the blood, right? And I didn't want to do anything to damage my kidney. I wanted to ensure its longevity because there isn't really a lot of long-term research on the longevity of a kidney. Whether it's one that was donated, I donated mine to my son back in 1995 when I was on active duty. And that was good that the Army allowed me to do that because I was in the Army at the time. I served 22 years. I'm going to take a drink. I retired in 2004 as a Sergeant First Class E7. And then continued working for the Army in Crystal City, Virginia, for the Army's Installation Management Command for 6 years as a contractor. And then I became a civilian in 2010 and moved to San Antonio. And I'm just getting ready to retire. My retirement date is 31 December. And I will have 15 years and 4 months as a civilian. So altogether, almost 44 years working for the Army. And it's been good to me. It gave me a new life, if you will. I had no plans at that time before I joined. I was just living my life without really any cares. My parents wanted me to join the military, and my dad finally talked me into it. This was during the Falklands War. Do you remember that? Back in 1982, I was unemployed. I had quit my job working as a bellman for 6 years in San Diego, and my dad talked me into it and convinced me that the benefits that you can get from the military, the health, the dental, you get 30 days paid leave a year. You have that camaraderie and teamwork. And most of all, I think the most important thing is that you learn discipline. Discipline is so important for young men and women nowadays, in my opinion. I'm going to take a drink. Back to cruising. Let me give you some advice, though, if you are going to cruise, and that is, to not eat too much. Always keep your appetite up and exercise daily, whether it's just walking or running or on a machine or bicycle, lifting weights. Keep active. Drink lots of water. Don't overdo it with alcohol. I don't drink alcohol. I gave that up in 1988. So it's been 12 plus 25, 37 years since I've had any alcohol. I've been drinking a little bit of Heineken Zero beer, which has 0% alcohol. And they say it's alcohol-free right on the bottle because there's other non-alcoholic beers that have a small percentage of alcohol, like 0.5, 0.05, or 0.03%. But Heineken Zero has 0.0% alcohol. It says it right on the bottle. Recently, they had a lawsuit brought against them from a woman who claimed that it does have a minuscule amount of alcohol. And that was several years ago, actually. And I don't think she won that lawsuit. So if anybody says different, just do the research. Heineken Zero supposedly has 0% alcohol, not any alcohol, in other words. But after drinking a few bottles of it, I don't know if I really want to drink alcohol. And I worry that it might in some way be detrimental to my kidney. So I've got 5 bottles waiting in the refrigerator downstairs. I had one the other day. It's a nice change to have a cold beer. You know, it tastes just like beer, but doesn't have any alcohol in it. And also on cruises, don't eat too many sugary things too, because that will also affect your appetite. I see people, after a while, they can only eat ice cream. They'd be walking around. I don't want to judge them, you know, but I know how it is because I went through it myself. You can get to the point where you've been constipated for a couple of days, you know, and you can't eat as much. I like to eat every day. I love my meals. You know, I have like 3 or 4 meals a day. And like I said, I don't want to judge anyone. I'm just speaking my mind, thinking out loud here. You can do what you want to do. I'm just saying I've noticed that. Maybe I shouldn't have said anything, but there it is. Be careful with the sweets, because they pour that on you. They want you to come back, and that is a good reason to come back on a cruise, because they have their own chefs that make the desserts, beautiful pies and cakes and other delicious delectables, you know. But as I said before, the best thing about cruising is meeting the people. Every now and then, not always, but sooner or later you're going to get in a conversation. They usually put you next to somebody in the dining room, and you strike up a conversation with a couple, for example, strangers who you've never met before, and then you get to know each other, where you're from, their names. Then later you see them on the boat, you know, walking around, you say hello to them. But in those few moments that you do get a chance to talk to each other, you share things about your life, you know, where you live, and maybe what you believe in, and what you like, what you don't like, you know, it is. You start up a casual conversation with somebody, all that small talk. But it's interesting, you get to know these people, and you can find out really, really cool things about them that you would never would have guessed, you know, just how much people know and how intelligent they are and all the problems they've been through. One couple, for example, we sat next to, I was talking about how I saved a woman, a high school classmate, from getting raped when I was on my senior trip in 1973 in Malacay, Mexico. And it's quite a story. I've talked about it on my radio show one time. I won't go into it now, but the woman, the wife of the man, said her husband had gone through a similar thing. He'd been in a fight with the cartel. I didn't hear the details, but he'd been stabbed and shot, and it had affected his speech in a way. His speech was kind of slurred, but he had survived that. He was in a coma for like a week or two, and here he was on a cruise ship, and that's what they do now. They go on all these cruises every year, and he's lucky to be alive. I'm kind of lucky to be alive too, because that man, he was a husky fisherman who had a record of having sexually assaulted other women before in the past. And I was 17 years old at the time, and he was a husky Mexican fisherman, full-grown man. So I came upon it. I'll tell you a little bit about it. I was with this woman named Susan Cromlin. She was a senior classmate. Two Mexican twins, Ruby and Esmeralda, who are also my senior classmates. And the English teacher, I forget her name. They wanted to go to watch the sunset around the bay. It was like a horseshoe bay. And on one edge of it, there was a bunch of rocks. And they wanted to walk around to where those rocks were, although it was kind of like a little island separated from the mainland, and watch the sunset, which we did. And on the way back, it was starting to get dark, and I was leading the way through the rocks along the shore to find a path, and they were following me when I heard a screaming. And I thought to myself, I recognized it was Susan. And it was really getting dark at that time. And I ran back and I was thinking to myself, what could it be? Did she step on a scorpion, maybe? And I came up to this like a little knoll. And there was this Mexican fisherman on top of her. And she had a bathing suit on, a bikini. So she might have been like waving a piece of red cloth at a bull, if you know what I mean. And in fact, I remember the bathing suit was red. He ripped off her top. And then I came up to him and I pushed him and said in Spanish, what are you doing? He turned around and punched me in the face. Wasn't expecting that. But it wasn't too hard, but it kind of shocked me. And I took a step back and I started thinking, what am I going to do? So for some reason, I started lying. So don't believe that it's not good always to lie, because it worked for me this time. My parents never really taught me the value of truthfulness. And I knew that they used to lie a lot. Now I don't lie at all. I try not to. I might based on the circumstances, not tell the truth, but I don't like lying, if you know what I mean. So I started saying to that man, please don't touch her. I was trying to reason with him, talk with him. She's my girlfriend. We're going to get married. If you want, we can go into the town of where we were staying, and I'll pay for a prostitute for you. Please don't touch her. She's my girlfriend. I kept repeating that. And also the Mexican twins who were coming up kind of in the rear, and the English teacher were together, and they were on the other side of the knoll, kind of down, hadn't yet come back up yet. And they were also, they began to say things like, yeah, please leave her alone. Please, senor, you know, I can't remember. But with all of us kind of talking to him, he finally said, ya estuvo, which means I've had enough, and he walked away. Well, the problem was it was now dark, and he had gone walking in the direction that we had to go to get back to the resort. So I noticed that and said as much, and then we decided that we would go into the water and swim across the bay, kind of like on a diagonal line, because there was still a little bit of the bay that we had to go across to get to where the resort was, if you know what I mean. I would say approximately 200-300 yards of swimming that we had to do. And so we got into the water, and there were sharks. They had reported sharks in those waters. And we swam till we got to the shore, and then one of the twins went, came back, because at that time he had ripped her bottom off also, that when I was trying to reason with him. And I could tell he was getting excited. So it's a good thing that, you know, it didn't get worse later on. I found out that he had a machete. If I had tried to escalate it, you know, maybe try to hit him with a rock or something, then that didn't work. He could have killed me, you know, with his machete. So it turned out to be all right. And when we got back to the shore, the twins went and got a towel and they covered up Susan, and we went inside. The police came. We told them what had happened. The next morning, we woke up and they found him, and I identified him. And they asked us to come down to the station to fill out a report. We said we can't because we're heading back to Guadalajara on the bus. So he was, I don't know what happened to him, if he was set free or if he was convicted or, like I said, he had had some prior convictions, sexually assaulting women, so maybe they dealt with him in another way. I don't know. But it turned out all right. No one was hurt. Thank God for that. I'm going to take a drink. And surprisingly, afterwards, I was the hero. And they were, my senior classmates, very impressed with my courage. And that completely changed their attitude towards me. And that was a good thing. Before I left, you know, graduated, well, my senior year, and moved up to San Diego from Guadalajara. Okay, enough about that. I was talking about cruises, right? So the people you meet on cruises are pretty awesome. And they've got stories to share. All you got to do is strike up a conversation. And that, my friends, in my opinion, is the best thing about cruising, besides the food. And the service is always excellent, you know. They really take care of you at the restaurants. And then you can get room service. All around the boat, they're catering to your every need. It's wonderful. However, there are other places where you can go on vacation. Sandals, we've always talked about going to a Sandals. And I still would like to, but it's expensive, you know. For 1 week, two people, including airfare, you're looking at maybe $5,000-$6,000. And some are more expensive than others, but the good thing is you get to sit on the beach for a week, you know, and hear the waves roll up. It's so relaxing. In my opinion, there's nothing more relaxing than just listening to the ocean, the waves rolling up on the shore and going back. One of our best vacations that my wife and I had was back around 2007. We went to a timeshare that we rented through the Armed Forces Vacation Club in Jensen Beach, Florida. And it was a condominium. It was right on the beach. We had an enclosed patio. At that time, we weren't married, so she had the main bedroom, and I had the other bedroom with two twin beds, and she had the king bed. But it was right on the beach, and you could hear it, at, you know, all throughout the day and during the night. And it was a pretty decent beach, too. We used to walk up and down the beach, and swimming was fun. And we're thinking of doing that again. That would be all right. Now, we're going to change subject from cruises and talk about something that I was engaged in a conversation with one of the people at the party I went to before coming home. And that is life elsewhere in the universe. On my show, I talk about mainly metaphysical, spiritual things. And indeed, this is something that I believe would be so significant for the world to realize that we are not alone. It would change everything in a huge way. One reason to believe that we're not alone is this. With all the life here on Earth, over a million types of insects, over 30,000 types of fish, over 10,000 types of birds, over 10,000 types of reptiles, over 9,000 types of amphibians, over 5,000 types of mammals. That's a lot, right? Different life, different bodies. If all that life happened by accident, isn't it logical that that life, or maybe life like we can't even imagine, could happen anywhere around the universe? Anywhere. Because, you know, there's other planets out there, and they're discovering them more and more each day. Even before the Kepler Space Telescope and the James Webb Space Telescope, we knew in the core of our being, in our spirits and souls, that we're not alone in the universe, that there are millions of other planets out there and life like we don't know it, that we haven't seen or heard about before. But if there is a creator, logically, that creator could create the same or different life anywhere in the universe, because the creator is omnipotent and omniscient and has that magical power of creation, of creating something out of nothing. But if you want to learn about a particular encounter, an alien abduction that also proves that there's life elsewhere in the universe, you need to look no further than the Travis Walton abduction. Travis Walton, T-R-A-V-I-S-W-A-L-T-O-N. Here's a man that was young, maybe 21, who joined a crew of young men to clean and clear the countryside of trees in Arizona near Snowflake. And their job was to cut down trees and work from early morning to when it started to get dark. So they had their chainsaws and they would be cutting trees down. Seven men, including the foreman. One day, after a hard day's work, they were heading back in their truck, going down a dirt road, when suddenly, and it was starting to get dark, they saw a light in the distance. And they were wondering what it was. Could it have been a forest fire, perhaps, or maybe an airplane crash? As they got closer, the light became brighter, and then they came around a bend, and there in front of them was a beautiful flying saucer hovering about 20 feet off the ground. Of course, they were stunned, and Travis Walton got out of the truck and walked up to it and underneath it. It happened over maybe a couple minutes of time, but to keep a long story short, he got electrocuted, because you have to understand that these flying saucers, they interact with the Earth's magnetic field. They have their own propulsion systems which generate electromagnetic energy, kind of like magnetic energy, as if a magnet repels and attracts. They're able to create that repelling and attraction with their propulsion systems and interact with that Earth's energy. Remember that the Earth has an iron molten core, so it is magnetic until they get into outer space, and then they activate their anti-gravity electromagnetic beams, and they warp time and space and are able to surf in the fabric of space that way. But while on the Earth, they interact with the Earth's electromagnetic grid. So he unknowingly stepped into that area between the Earth and the spaceship and got electrocuted. Plain and simple. I'm going to take a drink. And he got thrown for about 10 feet. And the foreman and the other men in the truck freaked out and thought that they had used some kind of weapon and they were going to turn it on them. So they took off down the road in the truck. And when they maybe drove a few hundred meters, the foreman, since Travis Walton was his friend, said, wait, stop the truck and said, wait, we got to go back and get him. We left him there. And they all said, no, you're crazy. You know, they'll kill us. And he said, no, if you don't want to ride back and find Travis, you can get out right now. And that's okay. I'll pick you up later. So they went back, but Travis Walton was gone. What happened was the beings on board the spaceship beamed him up. They have that technology. You know, if they're able to traverse the universe at light speed and beyond and travel interdimensionally and cover millions and millions of miles and light years even, then they have that capability to beam people on board their spaceship, just like in Star Trek. It's matter transformation, the disassembly and reassembly of molecules. They have that technology. You better believe it, because they're years and years in advance of our own civilization. Even before our solar system was created, they were traveling throughout the universe. You know, we're in the spiral arm of the Milky Way galaxy. Even before our galaxy was created, some of these civilizations have been in existence for hundreds of millions of years. So it's logical, right? And so they beamed him aboard, and they were trying to help him because he was near death. And he remembers waking up in a room where he thought he was in a hospital. He was on a table, and there were some lights above him that looked like the lights on an operating table. And when his eyes began to focus, he saw these beings that were extraterrestrials, maybe about 4.5-5 feet tall, with uniforms on, big heads, and very, very large brown eyes, all looking at him. And he got scared, jumped off the table, and found something to defend himself with, because he thought that they were going to try to kill him. He didn't know what had happened. And so they ran away. They ran out of the room, and he went outside the room himself. They went to the right. He went to the left. He found this room inside the spacecraft where he figured that's where they piloted the spacecraft. And it had like a wall with the stars on it. And there was this chair in the center of the room with all these knobs and dials on it where they were, I think, able to steer or pilot the spacecraft. And then these human-like beings appeared, and they were maybe 6 feet tall with blonde hair and blue eyes, and had helmets over their head. And they got him to accompany them back to a room where he was put on a table and put to sleep. They put an oxygen mask over his mouth. And the next thing he remembers was waking up on the ground outside Snowflake, I think a city called Hyber, maybe. It was at nighttime, and he remembers looking up and seeing the spacecraft, and then it just shot up into the sky and disappeared. And he was on the ground. It had been 5 days since he was brought on board. Meantime, back in his hometown, everyone thought that the other lumbermen had killed him and covered the body somewhere. And they had to deal with that for 5 days. He eventually wound up taking lie detector tests. And this makes my point about this being a real encounter and not something that's fiction or make-believe. Because throughout the years, that first one to the last lie detector test they took, I think they took like several of them, each and every one of them, those young men that saw that flying saucer, that saw Travis get zapped, knew that he was missing for 5 days. And also Travis Walt, when he came back and he related his experience, and he also took a lie detector test and subsequent ones, they all passed the lie detector test. Now don't forget that these lie detector tests are going to take a drink. And this is very important that we don't forget this. Those lie detector tests are used as evidence in a court of law to prosecute people of crimes like murder. So they are considered effective, right? Every one of those young men took that test. Did you see a flying saucer? Yes. Did you see that it zapped Travis Walton? Yes. Did you kill Travis Walton? No. And you can look at the video that's out there on YouTube for free, even. All you got to do is put in Travis Walton. It's a documentary. The movie that was made by Hollywood called Fire in the Sky was embellished very much and didn't really tell the truth. And that's Hollywood for you. They're more concerned about doing some things to get people to look at it, you know, watch the movie. They're not so concerned with what really happened, the sequence of events as they really happened, which is unfortunate because these beings weren't violent. They actually saved his life, and that wasn't portrayed in the movie. So, my friends, two things. To prove that there's life out there, unless you want E.T. to land in your backyard, and you can look him in the eye, shake his hand, talk to him, maybe get a piece of his spacecraft to prove to you that they are real and they do exist, that they live on some planet, another planet out there elsewhere in the universe, then accept the evidence for what it is. It is concrete, irrefutable evidence. All this life happened by Earth, on Earth, by accident. Then logically it could happen by accident anywhere in the universe. But if there's a creator, the Creator had the power and the knowledge to create all this life, and logically, the Creator would have the power and knowledge to create either the same or different life anywhere, anywhere in the universe. 10 light years away, 100 light years away, 1,000 light years away, 1,000,000 light years away, 1,000,000,000 light years away. The Creator created everything. This is the Creator's universe. All the way back to the Big Bang. So there is life out there, my friends. You are entitled to your opinion. But if you are a logical person, if you are an intelligent person and you pride yourself on your intelligence, then you have to, in my opinion, accept the evidence for what it is, the way I've related it to you. You can only come to one conclusion, and that is we are not alone in the universe. They are out there. They are out there. They know about us. They know all about us. We live on a very beautiful world. It's a wonderful world we live in. I'm going to take a drink. I see trees are green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue, clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Well, it is, my friends. It is a wonderful world we live on. And hopefully some of the damage that we've done to the air and the water isn't irreversible, because we want this planet to survive, right, for our children and generations of children down the road. Yes, this is a planet of suffering and pain, all the wars we've had in the past, and the killing still goes on today. But peace is always a hope that we can have. Peace. Who wants to live in peace, or who wants war? There is a small minority of people who do want war and killing, and that's unfortunate. But one also has to understand the nature of this planet that we live in and on, that we live and share this planet with animals, and their mindset is different than our own. We are not at the top of the food chain. Plus, we have to deal with Mother Nature. And sometimes Mother Nature can be very violent. And all this weighs on our psyche, you know, as well as the atmosphere and the barometer. And it's not an easy place to live. This life is hard, but it's meant to be hard, so that we can learn and develop spiritually. That's why we're here, to develop ourselves spiritually. No other reason. Not to raise children, to work a job, to have freedom and pleasure, spend a lot of money, drink wine. No, we're here to develop spiritually. And that's the only reason we're here. And you will find that out if you don't believe it now, on that day in the future, hopefully far into the future, when you transition from this life to the afterlife, which is real, my friends, very real. And you're going to love it, because you're going to remember where you came from at that time, before you were born. And we can't remember when we were born, but before we were born, we existed. And when we die, we're going to go back to that existence as a spirit and a soul. Our soul is the brain of our spirit, just like we have a physical brain in our physical body. And we're going to continue on with our soul's evolution, hopefully graduate to a higher existence, a planet of a superior category of evolution, and eventually continue that journey of becoming a co-creator God. Are you alive, my friends? Do you really know that you are alive and that you have that potential to die? I don't want to be morbid, but reality is that we are all alive. And some of us aren't going to be here tomorrow. Around the world, 40,000 people a day die. What am I saying? Each day is a gift, a blessing. Use it, my friends. Embrace it. Embrace life. Love it. Be grateful. Pray to that higher power and say thank you. That's one way to develop yourself spiritually. And indeed, pray. 1 minute. Prayer changes things. I pray for you. You pray for me and watch God change things. Creator of the universe, thank you for everything. We love you. You're awesome. You're omnipotent, omniscient. Please, look at all these children here on earth that you have. They're good, decent, most of them. Family-oriented, loving, kind, generous people. Bless us all and help us in any way we need it. I won't be here next week, my friends, but Doug will play a rerun or some music, maybe. I'll see you the following week. Take care. I love you. Bye-bye.